Today is the sixth and last Sunday in Lent. So we've been reflecting and praying and fasting as a way to lean into God in preparation for worship on Good Friday and Easter. It's also Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week and the events that lead up to Good Friday and Easter. And this Sunday remembers Jesus coming into Jerusalem for the last time for the Jewish Passover festival and oddly riding on a donkey. And even while the crowd cheered for him, they had no idea that by the end of the week, Jesus would himself become their sacrificial lamb. And today's passage in Philippians 2, 5 to 11, Paul invites us to consider the way Jesus holds power and uses power in relationship and compares that with how we do it, especially how we carry friendship with people who think differently than we do. If we are to love our neighbors as Jesus instructs us to, how do we do that when we encounter someone whom we find disagreeable? Well, Paul says Jesus shows us how. And we can too if we are willing to follow his example by adopting the attitude of a servant, Paul says in verse 5. That is, if we approach our relationships with the intention to serve another person rather than with some other motive or agenda. So Paul pens this poem that people could memorize as a mental poster of the example Jesus sets for us, the length Jesus goes to serve us as our friend. And while the Gospels have Jesus riding on a donkey, it seems to me Paul paints a picture of a staircase between heaven and us. And Paul proceeds to describe Jesus coming down the stairs, how he steps down out of his position and status and standing as God to becoming human like us. Then he takes several steps down through the Roman social ladder until he lands in the basement level of a slave, where he not only gives up his entitlement as God, but also forgoes the higher rights of the elite to become a servant to everyone else above him. But he didn't stop there. He takes another step down, where the immortal, all-powerful God submits himself to the oppressive power of death, and not just any death, but all the humiliation and cruelty of death on a cross, the worst punishment human beings concocted to demean a person and make an example of him to keep other people in line. So Jesus started at the top of the staircase as God, but he kept coming down to our level, stopping at nothing, and even letting himself be put to death as a criminal when he has done nothing wrong. And Paul says, it's all out of his service to us. Jesus risks and then gives his life at the bottom of that staircase to bring God's message of love and offer friendship and make a way for us to become children of God. This is what happened on the first Good Friday. Good for us, but terrible for Jesus in the way he suffered at the hands of human beings. But he willingly bore that pain because he bore it out of service to human beings. Somehow, Jesus' death gained us a benefit. Now, there are different analogies in the Bible that try to explain what that benefit is. For the Jewish people, Jesus is like that sacrificial lamb for their worship ritual, like a Passover, that removes the spiritual barriers that keep them from entering God's presence. For criminals, Jesus takes their place on the cross the way he took the place on the cross meant for Barabbas, a rebel on death row who got a pass from his death sentence when they nailed Jesus to his cross. For slaves, Jesus' life is the price someone pays to buy out a slave contract. So the slave gets to start over and live free. And for soldiers, Jesus is the king who leads the battle against the enemies of humankind and gives his own life to deliver the final blow that wins the battle so his people can now live in peace and thrive. Jesus' death creates a kind of theological riddle. In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says death is the final enemy to humankind. So Jesus dies to defeat death, however that works. But Jesus doesn't stay dead. God raised Jesus from the dead on the first Easter so that because Jesus volunteered to come down that ladder, that staircase, because Jesus died, physical death is no longer the final chapter of our story as human beings. Because Jesus died, we too one day will experience resurrection. So somehow Jesus died for our benefit. Jesus died in his service to us, and Paul calls that journey down the staircase from heaven humility. And Paul says that's the key to holding and using power in our relationships, the way to love people, our neighbors in church and our neighbors where we live and work, is to use our power to serve people. Now, in the ancient languages like Egyptian, humility describes low tide of the River Nile. It's when the life source of the country is depleted and now you can see the muck and guck at the bottom. So no wonder before Jesus, nobody thought of humility as a virtue. Humility is not anything you want to be. Nothing that can in any way be inspiring. Nothing anyone wants at any table. No one picking teams would pick someone at low tide, unless they just need someone expendable to fall on the sword and take one for the team. Have you heard about these giant sinkholes in the Canadian North and Alaska and Siberia? There's one in Siberia that's 20 meters wide and 30 meters deep that just appears suddenly. So parts of highways and entire towns could just, without warning, fall into an abyss. It has something to do with climate change and how the rising temperature is causing the permafrost to melt below the surface. So this one guy in Alaska has the idea of building new houses on sleds. So when a sinkhole is spotted, they hope they have time to hitch the house to the pickup and pull it away to safety. But even more alarming is what's coming out of the bottom of these pits, like ancient viruses that we no longer have immunity to from the thawing ice. And they have found DNA of extinct animals like woolly mammoth, and somebody wants to bring one back to life. I hope they have thought that one through. And then there's apparently a massive amount of methane gas, the gas that's causing climate change, but many more times than what we're currently producing. And so far, in all the calculations of the progress of global warming, no one has yet taken the sinkhole gases into account. So, yikes, does the bottom of these sinkholes sound like some place you want to go for a vacation? I don't think so. Well, imagine what humanity looks like to Jesus from the top of his heavenly staircase if he looks with our eyes. It probably looks like the Nile at low tide or the bottom of the Siberian sinkhole. And while we would likely be happy to stay at the top and just pull the basement door shut, Jesus willingly made the trip all the way down to the muck at the bottom to where we live, and then gave his life to defeat death, to create a benefit for us so we could live on in eternity. So while we might not fully understand how Jesus does that, as we enter Holy Week, Paul's poem reminds us why Jesus willingly allowed himself to be put through the ringer of those events. He did it for us. Our spiritual well-being was pressing on his mind when he sat down to a last meal with his friends. We were why he didn't fight back when soldiers interrupted his prayer meeting and arrested him, why he allowed the different courts to bulldoze him into a death sentence, and why he endured the lashes, the nails, and the humiliation of crucifixion. He bore it all as his voluntary, humble act of service to us. He died for us, defeated death for us, so we could one day live on in eternity. I'm learning some new things from a book I'm reading about how ancient people think. It's called Jesus and the Forces of Death by Matthew Thiessen, who teaches religious studies at McMaster University. So apparently, ancient people, separated space and things into sacred and human. So sacred spaces and things belong to the gods and are for their use. And human spaces and things are where we live for our use. But human spaces and things have a kind of impurity, a kind of contamination that cannot be brought into sacred spaces. So before someone could enter into holy spaces or touch holy things, they have to be properly and thoroughly cleaned of that impurity. It's kind of like how high-tech labs are very sensitive to dust. So people going into these labs to make space telescopes and satellites have to decontaminate and put on protective clothing so they don't track dust and dirt into the lab. The problem with spiritual contamination is not that humans live in spiritually dusty places and have spiritual dust all over us. That's normal for us as human beings living in human spaces. The problem in the ancient world is when we track that dust into sacred spaces, which has a kind of defense system against dust and a program to zap dusty things. So in the Old Testament, there are cautionary tales of people dropping dead because they had spiritual dust on them, did not clean properly, and entered into holy spaces and got zapped by the security system. So what we have in the Old Testament regulations like Leviticus are the proper procedures for cleaning and purification before we could enter into holy spaces, into God's presence, just like the clean labs. And the job of the priests are to serve the people by making sure they know what they need to do and how to do the purification procedures properly for their own protection. And according to the author, the Old Testament describes three major sources of spiritual contamination. So first, you have the different bodily discharges, like blood and other liquids. The second source, it's a skin disease that presents as dead skin flaking off. Now, it's generally now agreed that it's not leprosy as typically translated in our Bibles. It's, they think, maybe something more like eczema. And third, it's corpses. So anyone having had a discharge or a bout with eczema, or anyone having come into contact with those people or a corpse, would have spiritual dust on them and would need to go to a priest and go through a proper cleaning before they could properly enter into sacred space. But by Jesus' time, there's now glitches in the whole cleaning thing. So first, there were the times when really contaminated things were deliberately brought into the temple, like Ahaz in 2 Kings 16, who installed an Assyrian altar in the temple. And then in Jesus' time, the temple management allowed merchants to set up booths to do business in worship space, and this made Jesus throw a fit. Secondly, priests who were sloppy and ill-trained and failing to do the jobs to serve the people who want to enter into sacred space to be with God. And so this is the complaint against the priests in Malachi 2:8. For failing to preserve knowledge and teaching and causing people to stumble in their worship. And then there are the really hard cases that even the priests didn't know what to do. Like the woman in Luke 8 who suffered some sort of menstrual bleed nonstop for 12 years. Since the bleeding never stops, there's never a chance for her to even begin the purification procedure. And then there are people with severe eczema who never stops shedding skin. So again, no way to even begin purification. And then, of course, there are always people who die and those who tend to the dead. people who then have to isolate themselves for a time and clean before they can enter sacred spaces. But when people die in inconvenient times, the quarantine times would interfere with important times at the temple. So in the last part of the Old Testament, the prophets felt so contaminated by spiritual dust that purification rituals felt like a losing battle against the exponential growth of dust. So they longed for God to send a servant to rid them of the contamination once and for all, so it would become safe for them to freely enter God's presence. So with that in mind, think about what happens around Jesus the next time you read through one of the Gospels. When Jesus encounters someone with that skin disease, instead of a temporary cleaning from a priest, the cause of that disease disappears, and they're permanently cured of the contamination that keeps them out of God's presence. When Jesus encounters corpses, they become undead. So there's nothing contaminating anymore for the people who had come into contact with the corpse before Jesus showed up. And when that woman in Luke 8 came into arm's length with Jesus and secretly touched the hem of his shirt, she was healed of the thing that made her bleed, without Jesus even needing to do anything to treat her. As if Jesus carries a sort of power on his person that eradicates spiritual dust without harm to dusty people. The gospel writers understood that Jesus came to remove the source of spiritual dust in our world so we can freely enter into sacred space to be with God and not have to worry about being sapped by the security system. And that's why Jesus died. And that's why he died for us, so we can be with God without fear of spiritual contamination, so we can one day live on in eternity sharing sacred space with God. And that's why at the moment of Jesus' death, the safety curtain in the temple that was the protective fence between sacred space and human space ripped and fell to the floor. Because Jesus' death did something to make it safe for us to be with God without needing to worry about spiritual dust. Because Jesus has done away with the source of spiritual dust, and that's why Jesus died for us. A few years ago, we noticed our dad in Hong Kong living by himself was starting to forget things and would lose his sense of direction when he goes for a walk. But because he refuses to get on a plane and come back here, we were lucky to find a housekeeper to tend to him, someone who's like a relative of a family friend. Well, a month ago, my brother called to say that my dad had tested positive with COVID. He had been insisting to go on his walks during this awful COVID wave they're having, even though everyone has tried to tell him to stay in. So the next day, my mom called him and found him quarantined in his room in a terrible state. His throat was so sore he couldn't talk and was too weak to get out of bed. So we asked the housekeeper to call my brother. My brother called 911. An ambulance came and took my dad to hospital. Now, my dad is 89, so we held our breaths, not knowing how the week was going to go. But to our relief, by the second day, his fever cleared and the hospital called to say he was doing very well. And by the end of that week, he was moved to a quarantine facility and he is now back home. But I was surprised to hear that when the ambulance came to the house to get my dad, our housekeeper decided to go with him. Nobody asked her to. And when they got into emergency, she waited with my dad for 9 hours before he got looked at. And for 9 hours, she catered to his need for food and water. And by the time my dad was admitted and she got home, she had tested positive for COVID herself. Now, she's also recovered, but in her service to our family, she allowed herself to be infected for us. She got sick for us. This lady is giving fresh meaning for me to what it means to be a servant, and a new analogy for what Jesus did for us on Easter. Jesus humbled himself, took on a human body, and in service to us, allowed himself to be infected with spiritual dust. Then he died for us and defeated death for us by taking all the dust with him to the grave, because only he could get rid of our dust once and for all, because it is what we need to have unfettered access to God, Father, Son, and Spirit. Now, what Paul suggests, why he wrote this poem for us, is so we could bring some of that humility and service to our neighbors in church and in the world. In Japan, there are these people called the do-nothing guys. Now, this is how an article describes their service. He charges about $85 per session, and most frequently hired to accompany people who are at a turning point in life, who want to rewrite traumatic memories or experience or a vulnerable moment they feel uncomfortable sharing with friends or family. He'll just be there with no judgment and away from your personal space. Like this young lady who was working through a breakup, she wanted to go to this restaurant to eat. It's the favorite place she and her boyfriend used to go to, but she didn't want to go alone. So she hired this do-nothing guy who just sat and ate silently and responded with an acknowledging way whenever she said something. And mostly he was just there with her for the whole time. And there was a guy who ran a marathon and just wanted to see a friendly face when he crossed the finish line, so he hired a do-nothing guy. There are people who need to go sign divorce papers or get a diagnosis from a doctor, or even someone who needs to finish a thesis and just wants someone to keep them from slacking off. Now, when I read this, I first thought, wow, this is where we are now, that we're so busy with our lives and so invested in ourselves that we may be giving our friends the impression we have no time to show up for them, that our friends don't even feel like they could ask, and people are willing to pay money just to have someone mimic a friend. Then I thought, wow, how humble do you have to do this, even if it's a job, to completely set aside my own agenda and schedule and just to show up and be present and not do any more than just what the person asks, to not assume anything or impose anything except what my friend asks of me, and just be there and be interested and not have it about me, but just to serve another person by being present. And that is the kind of humility Jesus exemplified. When he volunteered to walk down that staircase from heaven to come to us as a human being, a servant, and then to die, and not just die, but the most humiliating kind of death, he came to vanquish spiritual dust, anything that might keep us and God apart, and not just temporarily clean, like what the priests in the Old Testament were trained to do, but a permanent clean by removing the source of the contaminating dust, so we don't need to fear for our lives whenever we lean into God, worried about getting sapped by the anti-dust system. So this is what Paul says in Ephesians 2:8-9. By removing the source of spiritual contamination, Jesus has made us alive with him. But none of us is imposed on us. It's a gift given to us out of God's love for us, out of his grace and mercy to us, to free us from the things that limit our lives. It's a gift to us if we want it, if we have come to the place where we need it. So during Lent, if you've been praying, reflecting, and fasting, if you've been plumbing what's down in the riverbed of your soul, maybe some of us have inventoried the muck we're carrying, we're processing it, trying to decide how to carry some of it forward, and maybe just tossing some other things because it's just dead weight. And every year, Good Friday and Easter Sunday remind us that when we get down to the muck inside of us, we find Jesus there with us, not judging us as weak or messed up, but full of mercy and kindness and compassion. And he has done everything necessary so that our muck no longer has the power to keep us out of God's presence. We can freely lean into God in our fears and griefs and losses. Our shame and guilt or bad thinking or wrong ideas about God cannot bar us from the grace and mercy and love of God. Because Jesus humbled himself and lowered himself into our pit to do battle with the power of spiritual dust and won. And when that curtain in the temple was ripped, there's no longer a need for God to quarantine himself from us for our protection, or for us to rub our skin raw every time we have the need to venture into God's presence. And Paul invites us to offer that same safety and compassion to each other and to our neighbors, so that no one needs to earn or fight their way to get our attention, just like none of us needs to do that to get God's attention. So this is Romans 8, 1-4 from the Message, and I just added the word thus. Here it is. With the arrival of Jesus the Messiah, that faithful dilemma with thus is resolved. Those who enter into Christ's being here for us no longer have to live under a continuous low-lying black cloud of dust. A new power is in operation. The spirit of life in Christ, like a strong wind, has magnificently cleared the air, freeing you from a faded lifeline of brutal tyranny at the hands of sin and death. God went for the jugular when he sent his own son. He didn't deal with the problem at something remote and unimportant. In his son, Jesus, he personally took on the human condition, entered the disordered mess of struggling humanity in order to set it right once and for all. The law code, weakened as it always was by fractured human nature, could never have done that. The law always ended up being used as a band-aid on sin and dust, instead of a deep healing of it. And now what the law code asks for, but we couldn't deliver, is accomplished as we, instead of redoubling our own efforts, simply embrace what the Spirit is doing in us. So this week, as you remember the events of the Holy Week, remember that Jesus went through it all for us, for service to us, and we just need to embrace it. So, a moment to begin a conversation with God, and then Psalm 31 from Malcolm Guite. Psalm 31 is also a reading for this morning. The night withdrew and joy came in the morning. When I remember that I was remembered, that even through the bitter tears of mourning, I was sustained. The darkest powers were hindered in their insidious work within my soul, and I was held together and remembered by your unceasing love. You made me whole when all the world was tearing me apart. When there was fear on every side, you stole into the secret garden of my heart, a good thief in the night, and hid with me in your strong tabernacle. Held apart from all the strife of tongues, cacophony of condemnations, so you kept me safe in your deep silence and your mystery. Amen. Amen.